So this is episode 200 of the Everyday Mealmanship podcast. And man, I'm glad to be here. 200 episodes, that's really neat. When I started this back in 2020, I had no idea, you know, how many episodes this would consist of. I didn't know if it was just going to be a quick deal, a few episodes, called a series, whatever, or how it would go. But it has evolved, you know, over the years. We've done all kinds of things. We've had guest episodes. We have clinic debriefs, which is what this particular episode is. We're going to do a debrief on our Florence, Arizona semi-private clinic from last week. You know, we've done Meal Tip Tuesdays, and we've just done just episodes where I just talk about things. So anyways, it's been so good, you guys. Thank you for riding along with me for 200 episodes. You know, the last few episodes have been just a little shorter, about a half an hour. But most of the episodes, about 190 something of them, are over an hour. So we've got probably over 200 hours of content on this podcast, and it's all free to you. And it's free because we got some dang good sponsors that take such good care of me. We got Colt Saddlery making some of the best saddles and gear out there. We got Roman Home Tents. If you're looking for a dang good tent, looking for something to go packing with, go camping, go fishing, go hunting, you got to look up Roman Home Tents. Big shout out to a couple of magazines that have supported me since the beginning. We got Western Mule Magazine, Ben and Anita Tennyson over there doing a dang good job. We also got Mules and More Magazine, Corey Daniels, just killing it. She has a wonderful magazine. Also got to give a huge shout out to our newest sponsor, Diamond W Enterprises. You guys have been hearing me talk about them for about the past year. And if you're looking for a dang good jack, this breeding season is right around the corner, you guys. If you're looking for a good jack, you need to look up Diamond W Enterprises. Check them out on Facebook. My buddy Kevin Wright, he's got a great jack. I've had the opportunity to work with a couple of colts out of this jack. I've seen a bunch of them out of this jack, and they are nice, 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 you guys. They're awesome. And last, definitely not least, we got Boyd Ranch Mule Days, which is coming up next week. We're heading there. Going to be driving that way in just a few days. It's going to be a week full of clinics. Me, I'm teaching. My buddy Chris Clark, he's teaching packing out there. We got music. We got dinner. We got trail rides, Gymkhana. We got trail courses, auctions. I mean, it is so stinking fun. So anyways, I'd love to see you guys at Boyd Ranch Mule Days. It is getting to be one of the highlight mule events in this nation. Super fun, and I love it. So hey, you guys, in this episode, like I said, we're debriefing Florence, Arizona, a fantastic semi-private clinic, just absolutely wonderful. One of my favorite semi-private clinics that we've ever done. I'm not just saying that, I really mean that. It was a great time. We had a lot of great people there. All these participants were multiple clinic participants. If you're thinking, well, a clinic is a one and done deal, yeah, you got the wrong idea. These clinics, you keep learning. The people that come multiple years, it seems to be, you know, about 3 years. The 3 year mark of coming to clinics, folks really blossom. Now, all these people have been coming for three or more years. Some of them have been coming for 6, 7, 8 years. And what a huge game changer. So I love talking about this clinic. Great people. Thank you to all the people who came, and thank you for listening to this. So let's get to the episode. Here we go. Man, it's good to be in Arizona. I don't know. I keep forgetting why I live in Utah. I can't seem to find the reason why I live in Utah in the wintertime, because I don't ski. I don't play in the snow. I just ride mules. And Arizona seems to be the place that I should be in the wintertime. You know, I'm always jealous of my masterclass students. They're posting in our, we have a private masterclass group on social media, and they're posting their pictures down here in the sun, and they're riding and getting a lot of stuff done. And then all us other folks are up north in the cold snow country and just trying to survive wintertime. So, man, it's good to be down here. I'm just loving it. We just finished up a clinic in Florence, Arizona. My good buddy Nathan Heyer was the host, and he's been hosting. This is his third year hosting a semi-private clinic for us. I did a clinic debrief last week about our semi-private clinic in Ohio, where I absolutely froze. So it was kind of crazy going from being up there in Ohio in the teens with it snowing during the clinic and trying to stay warm. And then the next week we're down here in Arizona and it was 70s every day. And on Saturday it even hit 80. So what a change. And I tell you what, it's a dang good change. We had a fantastic time. You know, if you're listening and you have been to a regular clinic, that's awesome. But I'll tell you what, if you've never been to a semi-private clinic, you're missing out. You're kind of missing out on some real gold. They're just so fun. They're totally different than our regular clinics. You know, our regular clinics, the focus is on whatever class that we're presenting on there. And they're awesome. I mean, I love them and I'm excited to do them. The regular clinics for me personally are definitely easier to do. Semi-private clinics are more difficult. And you might be thinking, well, why? You know, a regular clinic, there's, you know, usually I have about 12 to 15 people in a regular class. Semi-private clinics, we have 4 or 5. And you might be thinking, well, geez, why would it be harder with 4 or 5 versus 12 to 15? From a teaching aspect, it's simple. The flow of the class. When there's 12 or 15 people, there are questions coming in nonstop. And I absolutely love that. I feed off of that. If I got good questions coming in, and if I have some good direction going in a regular clinic, and we're working on stuff, we're just getting to it and having a great time. At the end of the day, I feel like rejuvenated. I'm ready to go. Like I'm pumped. I kind of have a high at the end of the day. I mean, I'm feeling good. Semi-private clinics, you know, there's 4 or 5 of them, and it's a bit of work trying to keep them going. And the other difference too is, you know, a regular class is 3 hours, so people usually do, you know, like foundation in the morning, and then I'll have a different group for the mulemanship one, horsemanship one in the afternoon. Semi-private clinic, you go all day. But I absolutely love them, and I know people get a ton out of them, these semi-private clinics. The way we organize it, what we do is we typically have a discussion in the morning, and that could last 1, 2, maybe 3 hours sometimes. But participants bring their questions. They bring what they would like to discuss. It's a great time to have real discussions about mulemanship and horsemanship. It's an opportunity to dive a little deeper, and we can talk without you trying to hang on to your animal, right? So in Florence, Arizona, this past week, we had some great discussions. All the participants came each day with plenty to talk about, plenty of insight. The cool thing is all 5 people at this particular semi-private clinic were all repeats. All of them have been to multiple clinics with me, not just 1 before, not just 2 before. They've all been to multiple clinics before. I mean, every one of them has been to, I mean, let's see. Yeah, I'm looking at my list here of the participants: Nathan, Renee, Nikki, Herman, and Ron. I think they've all been to 4+ clinics. I believe so. So I think this particular clinic was the 5th or more. I know for a few of these people, they've been to a whole pile of them. I mean, some of them, I mean, Ron, he's been to probably more than 10, I think. That'd be my guess. Renee's been to a lot. Nathan's been to a lot. So, the cool thing about this group, I mean, it was awesome. We had some real deep discussions and we could dive further into things. And that was really enjoyable. You know, if you're listening and you're thinking about coming to a clinic, whether it's a semi-private clinic or a regular clinic, that doesn't matter. Or going to anybody's clinic for that matter, not even just mine, but you're going to go to anybody's clinic. Anything, if you're going to learn horsemanship, learn how to shoot a gun, learn how to sew, learn how to tool leather, whatever. If you can do your research before you go to that clinic and you really investigate the teacher and you look into what they're presenting and you really try to understand what you believe they're going to present to you before you get there, you are going to show up with so many more questions and so much more insight and have a foundation of understanding. It's going to put you ahead of the game. And so the participants here at this Florence, Arizona clinic, they had that. They knew the principles I teach already. They knew a lot of the maneuvers we teach already. They've had an understanding. They all listen to my podcast, which you're listening to right here. They all have watched the videos. Nikki, she's in the masterclass this year doing it and getting after it, and she's awesome. Nathan and Herman, they both did the masterclass last year, so they're getting after it. I'm trying to put the fire and the pressure to Renee and Ron to join the masterclass. Hopefully next year they'll jump in on that stuff, you know. But it was awesome because we had some real things to work on. Nathan also did a heck of a job hosting this clinic. He gave us all kinds of opportunities. He has a wonderful place out there in Florence. I mean, just a wonderful facility out there, in the outskirts of town, beautiful place, a huge arena. It's funny. Usually it works out like this, that like a little semi-private clinic where we only have five people, we'll have a massive arena. Like Nathan's arena out here is huge, massive. And then I'll go do a full clinic classes are full, 12, 15 people each class. And I'll have this little teeny, pen trying to work through things. So I really appreciated how he organized that and put up that great arena and got it ready for us. He had a fire pit ready to go. So each morning, we met there and, had breakfast together. Ron's wife, Janet, she made us breakfast a couple times, and holy cow, talk about some amazing good food, really good food. So we ate breakfast together. Then we sat around the fire together, talked mules, talked philosophy on training and different ideas, different maneuvers. Each day, participants shared their highlight, what they learned, which is my personal favorite part. I like to hear people's highlights, what stood out to them, what are they learning. And that's really fun. Usually what people learn, and this is the goal. I want them to learn something from their mule or their horse, not necessarily from me, because you guys have heard me say this, and I've said it, I say it at most of my clinics that, I'm not here to teach you mulemanship. I'm here to teach you how to learn mulemanship. You don't learn it from me at the clinic. You learn it from your mules. You learn horsemanship from your horse. And I'm here to help you put those puzzles together. And listening to these people, that was evident. They were learning from their mules and their horse. Renee had a horse. The rest of them had mules. And they were learning. And they were paying attention. And sitting around the fire every morning for a couple hours, discussing these things, diving deeper. I personally, as a teacher and a coach, that's my favorite. That's my personal favorite part is the discussions. And usually I get the most feedback on the discussion portions. Most people, if anybody gives me a review after, if they tell me something after, they'll usually say, yeah, I really enjoyed the discussion part the most. That's what most of them get it out, get something out of. So we did that every morning. And then we hit the arena and we just kind of started working on different things. Trying to stay organized in the checklist, which that was one of the little funky parts that I kind of had to round them up on Saturday, the third day, because the first 2 days we went out in the arena and we kind of just went to work on things. And I mean, they all did a little version of groundwork and they all got to riding and they were working on things. But I noticed that the first 2 days, none of them were particularly organized, which was interesting to me because these people have all been to multiple clinics with me. They were doing all the stuff I teach, but the order was a little funky. And I think it was just them getting a little bit lost in the order. And so on day three, I said, hey, let's go through this checklist together. Let's start at the beginning. So we went out there and step by step, I said, okay, this is what I do on the ground. These are the things I need to do. And, you know, with the groundwork, we're going to clear the front. We're going to make a circle. We're going to roll the hinds, roll the front, go the other way, roll the hinds, roll the front the other way, stand still, back them up, and get on. That's the basics of it. That could take you literally like 20 seconds. I mean, you could rock and roll at that pretty quick. If it checks off, cool. If it doesn't check off, well, the answer is obvious. Work on it. Like, go through those things. If I got to hit on some of those rounds, some of those maneuvers multiple times and do a few rounds, then I will. If it checks off pretty good, then I'm not going to sit there and hammer on it. If it's checking off nicely, I'm going to move on to the next step. And so taking them through that on the third day seemed to put things in perspective for them. And it flowed nicer. You know, if you're familiar with what we teach in our checklist, and if you've never been to a clinic, you can go online to my website, watch our online video library. There's two collections in there that will give you like the basic checklist. It says groundwork checklist is one collection, and it has the basic groundwork videos going through the checklist. And then there's the snaffle bit checklist, which is brand new. We just added that this past month, but it's just taking you step by step with a young mule that we're working, and you can see the order. So if you're not familiar, go check that out, and then what I'm saying here will make more sense to you. But the checklist is in order for a particular reason. Each move is preparatory to the next move. So when you're doing, you know, roll the hinds and stop, for example, that is preparing you for the next move, which is roll the hinds, roll the front. When you're picking up a soft feel at the standstill, that's preparing you to back up or to side pass or to leg yield or to do a haunches in, whatever. When you're working on downward transitions at the walk, that is preparing you to do better downward transitions at the trot. If we can't do it very good at the walk, it's obviously not going to work that great at the trot. So you go in order for a reason. But what happens is a lot of people get these maneuvers and they say, oh yeah, well, okay, I know I'm supposed to do this and this and this. And they go out and they begin working, whether it's on a trail ride or, you know, you can do this while you're working cows. This is not arena stuff. This is not something you have to do before you go. This is stuff you do as you go. You do it while you do it. That's the point. I don't do this stuff just to stand around arena, you guys. I do this stuff so I can get out and use it. So I would love it if people would connect the dots a little easier and kind of see the light there and go, oh, we don't just do the checklist to get ready to go out. We do the checklist going out. That's the point. So I'm just going through these things in order, and that's preparing me for the next versus just bouncing around. You know, we do all the lateral work, for example, all the left and right work, moving the hinds left and right, front left and right, etc. We do all that before we get to working on straight stops, soft feel, back up, and that kind of business, because it prepares the animal, both mentally and physically. You know, you're getting those body parts ready, you're getting the mind ready. So that's a very important part there. So on Saturday, we put that together and that made a difference. But anyways, that's kind of what we did every morning. We would just kind of work on things in the arena there, and they'd ride around, they'd ask me questions. It's more of a workshop style to where, here's what to work on. Now go practice it. Come to me with your questions and whatever you'd like to discuss. And that's what they did. But Nathan did a great job with giving us other options. So he had his cattle there. He's got, he had four head cows there, to play around with. He also had a rope and dummy, kind of a Hot Hills type rope and dummy. And then, of course, we had trails close by. So the first 2 days, we played with the rope and dummy, and we played with the cattle. And that was fun. You know, I introduced them to some different styles of working cattle. You know, most of the cow working that you'll see is kind of based off of a lot of cutting type cow work, or boxing, or basically arena event cow working. But what I showed them out there was some low stress stock handling, but utilizing a green mule or a green horse. A horse or mule that is not experienced working cattle and does not particularly have a whole bunch of skills. That's what we were utilizing. So one of the big moves, and if you go to any cutting barn, you'll get slaughtered for doing what I'm about to tell you to do. Okay, so be careful going to the cutting pen. But if you're working a green animal, this is a game changer. And, you know, one of my mentors and my teachers that I highly respect, Martin Black, he's the one that taught me, you know, these moves. But it's to turn away from the cattle. So the nature inside of us, the predator inside of us, wants to fight the cow. And then, of course, you know, the media and what we see in social media and what we see in the cutting pen and at these events makes us want to always headbutt and be head on to them. But what I was showing them here was very advantageous for a mule that's slower, or a horse that's slower or greener, that doesn't understand something, that can't really get back on its haunches. And so we'd pull a cow out of the herd and we're trying to get it to go somewhere, and we would kind of ride towards it. And instead of like stopping and getting ahead of it, we would just turn the mule away from it. And that would stop the cow, draw the cow, and make getting it to go somewhere so much easier, especially riding a green animal. And these folks just love that. And we utilized a few other moves. There's a bunch of different things, techniques that we worked on, backing into the herd, things like that. You know, I really love practicing low stress stockmanship any chance I get. And I'm really glad Nathan had the cattle there. You know, not all of our private clinics have cattle. But whenever the host can line that up, boy, it's so fun. It's so fun. You know, and the rope and dummy was great. We did some roping lessons with everybody. We worked on that. And, you know, even you might be listening thinking, you know, Ty, I just really don't care about cows or roping. That's okay. It was the lessons and the principles and the exposure in this stuff that made all the difference, you know, really getting the chance to utilize the skills, you know, to really like work through the maneuvers in use, like apply them in real life. And that was fun, you know, for a lot of folks. So anyways, we enjoyed that. So we usually do that, have a late lunch. You know, Nathan doesn't eat. That guy just does not eat all day. Doesn't eat, doesn't drink. He's a freaking machine, you know. So he stretched us all out all day. And anyways, usually we'd have lunch about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So everybody's like, Ty, come on, let's eat. And I can kind of go all day too without it. But so we'd have a late lunch pretty quick, get back to it and play around for another hour or two in the evening. And then this was also fun. You know, we were all camped right there together. We had the fire. So every evening we sat around the fire, enjoyed each other's company. And we had quite the treat on Friday night. Herman, he brought a projector and brought a big canvas, and he hung it up on the side of this this box thing, and fired up the projector, and we watched Evidence-Based Horsemanship, the DVD, which I know it might be surprising to you, but I'd actually never seen this. I've read the book. I mean, I don't know how many times. You know, if you're in the master class, you know that book is part of our curriculum, really, and we reference it all the time. And, you know, I've been studying with Dr. Steve Peters for years, partake of any teachings he has to offer. You know, I've been riding with Martin for years. And, but I've never seen the Evidence-Based Horsemanship DVD. It was great. I highly recommend it. If you've never watched it, you know, they sell it, and it just doesn't cost a whole lot. But the video really put a lot of things in perspective, and it was interesting hearing that. But I can tell you what, that was quite the treat sitting there with the participants that evening and watching that together, because our discussions on Saturday morning were really deep. And, you know, we had a chance to sit there and kind of discuss these mule brains and how these brains work and what causes the animal to do things and not. And, you know, the cool thing, you guys, there's so much wonderful education out there that are really knocking out a lot of the old dumb mule myths, things that people just make up. And, you know, I've come to respect a lot of the stuff that, you know, if you can't show it, don't say it, you know, meaning, you know, these evidences of how things work, you need to be able to show that. You can't just make some stuff up, you know. You know, one of the old myths that is just so dumb, and just if you believe it, just quit, is you better watch out, that mule's going to wait 20 years to get you back. Well, first of all, I'll say, okay, what the heck are you doing to that poor mule that it is holding a grudge on you for 20 years? That would be the first response. What'd you do to that poor thing? Figure out your life and do a better job here. But however, that's not real. They simply can't hold a grudge on you for 20 years because they lack a large frontal lobe. They don't have the capacity mentally. The part of their brain isn't even there. They do have a frontal lobe. It's small and it's dedicated to motor movement. It's not dedicated to abstract thought like that. Now, we're capable of that. You know, humans can definitely hold a grudge for 20 years and get somebody back because you have a huge frontal lobe with all kinds of abstract thought ability. And, but the horses and the mules don't have that. And anyways, it's so fun to learn this stuff. And, you know, it was a great discussion. I really appreciate Herman, bringing that, you know, on Friday night for all of us to watch. That was just really fun. And I was thinking, hey, I ought to get a projector and haul it around with me and do stuff like that with the clinics more often. But I'll leave it up to the participants to do fun stuff like that. So that was fun. And we had dinner. Megan Heyer, Nathan's wonderful wife, and she's so supportive of these clinics and, you know, really has Nathan's back on this. And she's just so, so awesome. Just a great human being. Sky really enjoys spending time with her. She's a great friend. But she took care of us on the dinners. She cooked for us. She had a welcome dinner ready to go for us when we arrived, just our family. The next day, she had a dinner for all the participants. The next day, she had a dinner for all the participants again. Friday, while we watched the movie with Herman and everything, she went, her and Sky went and got pizza for everybody. And anyways, it was just a all around great time. On the last day, on Saturday, we were able to get out on the trail. We took a vote. A couple people wanted to work cattle. The rest of them wanted to go out on the trail. So it was 3-2 on the trail ride. So what we did was we did both. We let Nathan and Nikki, they were particularly interested in working with the cattle. We let them do some individual herd work and pull a cow out and work with it, which was awesome. And they both just did so good. They got so good at reading those cows. And then we loaded up and we went out to the desert. And it was fun to get out and apply these things, you know, while out riding. You know, the only downside to doing a trail ride with one of these, you know, really in any clinic is sometimes we get kind of strung out and honestly, I just don't get the amount of questions that I would otherwise. But it is good to get out and apply these things. And, you know, one of the things Renee was working through out on the trail was dip trotting. If you don't know what dip trotting is, just picture going down through a little draw, a little ravine, a little depression in the terrain, and the mule or the horse usually wants to run down and back up. So they'll either trot or they'll run down. in backup. And sure enough, her horse was all for this. And we'd worked on this actually in the past a little bit. So it was fun to see Renee actually apply it. And, you know, she'd go down through it and her horse would trot. She'd turn around, go back. And the key on this dip trotting to really fix it is to not make them slow down. You let them figure out how to carry themselves. You know, they dip trot because they're lazy and they're not utilizing their hindquarters. So they're just letting all the weight push them downhill and back up. So she would go down and to the other side, turn around, come back, and she'd go again and come back and go again and come back until the horse would carry herself organized through there. And then she'd either stop and let it soak, which was a really great thing to do, or she'd just ride on, which was also acceptable. Either way, it was effective and it was fun watching her work through that. You know, one of the big things she just said, well, you know, she doesn't get out enough to work on it at home. And so I definitely encourage her to do more of that. But that's one of my pet peeves is dip trotting. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh geez, I have that problem. Well, there's your solution. Work on it and let the horse or the mule figure out how to carry themselves. What happens is when we get in the way, we block with our reins or do something. Yes, it might feel like you solved it in the moment, but you're not solving it long term. Long term, the animal needs to learn how to utilize their hindquarters, do it more often, and carry themselves down there. And you just have to give them the time to sort that out. You just have to let them figure it out. You can't force that on them. You can't manipulate them too much. You just have to let them figure it out. And that's exactly what Renee did. But everybody did good. You know, Nathan's awesome. He's a hard worker. Renee is always so kind and does such a good job with her horse, Maggie. Nikki, she's from up there in Montana. She brought a mule named Ruby. Nikki's so happy and she's just into this. She is just so into this mulemanship thing. She's working hard at it. She's getting after it. And she was just a delight to work with. My buddy Herman Macharo, you know, he's such a cool guy. If you want to just see he is like the ultimate Western figure. I mean, he looks good. He's always dressed up in his Western gear and he's getting to be a heck of a mule man. He's making great progress and it's a pleasure to work with him. And then of course, my buddy Ron from up there in Wisconsin, he's always a great time. He's always happy, always going to make you laugh. You never know what he's going to say. We joke that I'd like to get him on the podcast here, but I would definitely have to hit the explicit button if Ron's on here, but he's a great guy and we had a lot of fun. So anyways, overall, that clinic out there was fantastic and I hope we get to do it again someday. But hey guys, thank you so much for listening. I sure appreciate you. If you'd leave me a review on Apple, I'd love it. I'd be so grateful. Send me an email if you'd like. Ty@tsmules.com. Tell me what you think of the show. And other than that, you guys, God bless you, and we will see you down the road.